Good morning. I'm Suzette Harris. I just left the Jefferson County Department of Health in Birmingham, Alabama, and relocated to Dallas, Texas. So just being asked if I work for the Dallas Public Health. No, I don't. I'm looking for jobs. If anyone wants to hire me after this. So I'd like to thank NORC and the work that they've done and APHA for funding it. The work that I'm going to be talking about, we were very fortunate in our community to receive $6.3 million from CDC for a two-year funding opportunity called Communities Putting Prevention to Work to address obesity prevention through policy systems and environmental change. We also had $6.9 million to address tobacco at the same time, which caused chaos, but also meant that our community could do so much that I recognize other people can't just mimic without $14 million being added to your community for 2 years. It was an extraordinary experience. I'm still in therapy. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through really what NORC learned through the interviews, the case study that they did, and try and add some details to that, to the lessons learned. So usually the lessons learned will be in the yellow up on top. So first of all, just give you some background about the community I'm describing. So Jefferson County, Alabama is home to Birmingham. Alabama is the second most obese state, third most unhealthiest, and has the eighth highest cigarette use. Jefferson County has a population of about 650,000. It's about half white, 42% black, and almost 5% Hispanic. We have 35 cities in the county, so when you're trying to address policy change, a lot of those policies have to be done at the city level, so working with 35 cities, whether or not it's a city of 200,000 people or 2,000 people, you still got to go through the process of getting to know the mayor and the city councilors and community leaders there. And then we also have 12 school districts, and I know some counties here may have many more than that, but again, working through those different bureaucracies as you're trying to improve wellness in schools can take some time, and we have one health department, and it's strong. So the Health Action Partnership is a coalition with a current mission to collaborate to make Jefferson County a healthier place to live, work, and play. We did the Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships assessment back in 2005-2006, developed a community action plan that had 20 broad public health goals, everywhere from improving access to mental health services and other health care services, making our community more walkable, decreasing substance abuse, decreasing obesity, decreasing chronic disease, so just kind of all over the board. And from there, we formed groups that really took on action plans, and through that process, it was clear that there were four or five that were really gaining momentum through organizations in the community and through the community itself. And so for various funding opportunities that we applied for, and of course, sometimes it's about what's available to be funded for, we came up with some very high-level goals. Our city and county-level goals were to increase access to fresh produce and physical activity opportunities and to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke. And I'm going to focus more on the access to fresh produce and physical activity, but am happy to refer you to the appropriate person or talk to you more about eliminating exposure to secondhand smoke. I do want to point out some of the photos here. The one on the bottom is one of my favorites. We've had walking school buses at three elementary schools in the city of Birmingham the last couple years. And on Walk to School Day, beginning of this October, they had half of the elementary school show up that morning to do the walking school bus. Half of the elementary school. The parents have been so engaged. And we have police cars riding by the kids because it's not a safe neighborhood. So this is not you know, the upper echelon of society. This is very much the lower income, and we've been so grateful to the YMCA and the United Way for really leading that effort. We also had some system-level goals, so our highest-level policy working with the city governments I've talked about, but at the system level, looking to increase nutrition and physical activity in child care centers. We have an estimated 360 child care centers. You know, it bounces around on any given day. So that's 17,600 children birth to five every day for 10 to 12 hours a day in child care facilities. And then increasing nutrition and physical activity in the K-12 public schools, which is about 104,000 children ages 5 to 18 across our county. We did recognize that we need to give priority to schools and systems with high rates of free and reduced lunch to address health disparities. This picture here is actually a newspaper ad that we put in. Our campaign was Champions for Health, and if you can't read it, it says, "Healthy kids start with healthy choices. Does your child care provide wholesome foods and lots of active playtime? More fruits and veggies, more games that keeps kids moving, more healthy choices make a big difference. For more information, visit Champions for Health," which I encourage you to do, because you'll find lots of great stuff there. But we were very fortunate to be able to pass new child care regulations that did set standards, basic standards for nutrition, physical activity, as well as eliminating screen time up through age two, and then a minimal screen time after that for educational purposes, and also eliminating exposure to second and third hand smoke in all facilities. So the next big learning point, I think, was differentiating expertise needed for success. And I think this is something that we all know, but we don't always, I think, make a plan for or really sit down and figure out what that means. So we know that we need partners. We may have partners that are really close to us and that we're working with all the time, and then there may be the people that were like, I didn't know that you were interested in that. So we had a partnership already in place before we got funded, and there were other people coming to me, to my coworkers, and saying, well, have you thought about asking the food bank to be a part of your initiative? And I'd say, no. What do they have to do with it? and so people kind of explained all the different things, and I'd be like, oh, well, that makes a lot more sense to me. So it was a lot of thinking outside the box for myself, for other colleagues of mine, and figuring out what it meant to involve different organizations. And then really trying to figure out how to make the most of each partner's participation. And some of that I learned through the process of really getting to know the organization. You know, there's relationship building with my peers at an organization, and then it's understanding how their organization functions, both with their board of directors, with their volunteers, how they can get the word out, and making the most of what they can and cannot do, where they can leverage resources or put pressure points on decision makers in the community or not. I put this article up here because it was probably one of my proudest moments for the partnership. The line underneath there was a large series in the Birmingham News about civic leadership, and so part of this article talked about our partnership, and I'll read the piece underneath the photo. It says, one of the most significant efforts underway right now that has the ability to bring about transformative change in Metro Birmingham is the Health Action Partnership, a public-private effort that aims to battle obesity and tobacco use by, among other things, linking the region's walking and jogging trails. Largely due to civic involvement, the partnership won a $13.2 million federal grant. So really, the community started touting how great it was to partner with the health department and with these other entities, primarily United Way, Community Foundation, YMCA, to make change and to transform Birmingham. Birmingham doesn't have a great reputation in our nation. We were trying to change that, but we were also trying to make it not just change the reputation, but really make the community better. So the policy systems and environmental change piece has really taken off due to this work. So in engaging new partners, again, it goes back to understanding their mission, their values. One of the examples here is in developing the Greenway Master Plan, which this is the kind of overview of our new Greenway Master Plan for Jefferson County. And this is, Birmingham is right here as a piece of it. The Freshwater Land Trust was the lead agency for doing this work, and we wanted them to really also move the needle because they were constantly speaking with mayors and elected officials. I mean, they're their best friends. Everyone likes greenways. Who doesn't want more parks? That is not like a hot issue that people, you know, are divisive about. Everyone wants more parks. But things like complete streets or smoke-free workplaces, all of a sudden, you know, people aren't always in agreement about. And so the more that our partner at the Freshwater Land Trust could leverage our talking points and use them about how great the partnership was, how important transforming our community to be a healthier place, and just putting things out there, the more receptive these decision makers were about things like smoke-free policies. We've now have 5 cities in Jefferson County that have comprehensive bans on smoking, including Birmingham, which is huge for the South. So to be able to do that, and I really attribute it to the fact that we were working on greenways, I mean, in part, it just not something you would think about, but being able to leverage those points. So just going down the list here of things to think about when engaging new partners, really being able to be transparent and communicate openly with them. I think a lot of agencies have a hard time doing that, but we want to hold our cards close to our chests. A lot of our partners had a hard time. We would have to sometimes have those closed-door conversations and say, listen, we just need a heart-to-heart and to really understand where you're coming from and let you know where we're coming from, because we all have our battles that we're facing internally and externally. And then establishing a brand for the coalition, I think the communications piece that was talked about earlier, that was really important for us in establishing a brand that wasn't, for us, because we were working on both tobacco and obesity, that wasn't just focused one way or the other. Champions for Health worked for us well because we're a big football state, and I guess they've had some national championships or something, I don't know. and then learning from partners with communication savvy, again, really understanding what resources your partners have and knowing where to use their expertise. Last but not least is, what are the unique contributions that the health department can make? And I've struggled with this time and again with other health departments, is really look at what kind of vast influence you can have in the community because of who you are as a health department, because you're already in every single child care center just looking at their kitchen. But you know what? You have a point of contact in every single child care center that can make a huge difference for community engagement. So I'm going to play a little matching game, because this is really what we did. These are 4 of our big policy changes that we wanted to make: child care regulations across the county, school wellness policies in 12 different school districts, which was complicated, complete streets policies, that's in 35 cities, and then eliminating food deserts, which is a little bit of a loosey-goosey thing to say in some ways, but, you know, really bringing more fresh produce into the community, into neighborhoods. And then this is a list of the organizations that we had at the table and that were interested in being a part of our effort, because their mission somehow aligned, whether or not we understood how it aligned and all that they could do for the partnership. And so as you look down this list, you may not think, you may think that Main Street Birmingham would be working on complete streets, or that Children's Policy Council would be working on child care regulations. I mean, you just don't necessarily know. It's that whole don't judge a book by its cover piece here, that people could be working on a lot of different things, and some of them are more obvious than others. But we had several different organizations on each of our policy teams, and that also made a huge difference. And I'll give some examples. For child care regulations, so the health department was the one that goes in and inspects the child care centers. The Board of Health is the entity that can make the child care regulations happen. But without the United Way Success by Six initiative, we wouldn't have been able to assess 100 child care centers for physical activity and nutrition environments, and actually be able, we took some of the funding and we granted out 40 playgrounds to child care centers that made changes in leadership, were really leaders in our community. Mm-hmm. And then the entity Child Care Resources did training for child care staff on nutrition, physical activity, and that continues through our regulation process. For school wellness policy, the Children's Policy Council, and along with the United Way, were really the leaders in making the policy change and working on that level. But a small organization, very small, Better Basics, we funded them for pennies compared to other things. They took the 5 most commonly used after-school health curricula, and they did a comparison grid. And it's like this small information packet for after school providers. After school providers don't have time to make a to really go out and research which program is going to be best for them to use and what's going to make the most sense for their kids, for the facility that they have. And it literally lays out, what does this cost you? What kind of staffing do you need? What kind of space do you need to do these activities? And it just made a big, big difference for our community in being able to advance policies that improve physical activity and nutrition after school. And then Jones Valley Urban Farm, local organic urban farm, teaching farm, and they really worked on school food procurement. So those are just examples, and I'm happy to talk about it more. And then, of course, there's information on our website. But just so many different ways that people could play into the policy change, the training, the technical assistance, and everyone has their own niche. And I had no idea how well this was actually going to work. And is that me?
Yes.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Time
is up. So one of the last things is it's about integrating activities and to ensure a seamless approach in the community. Again, the communications, having the cross-issue media campaign was really important for us. We would drive people to the website. They may care about childcare. They may care about schools. They may care about walkability. But when they got to the website, there'd be all these other issues, including secondhand smoke. And so it started to increase interest in these different topic areas. And that was huge for us. We did use Facebook and Twitter. We have a YouTube channel. You can view all of our TV spots at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/championsforhealth. And then, of course, sustaining the partnership. This was probably one of the things we did not understand, how critical this across the different issues was going to be. Ironically, we knew about it from other levels, like with the media. But bringing people together and actually kind of having them get into groups, not the food systems, not all the foodies together at one time, but actually pairing up the people working with childcare with people working with food, and they would start making a plan for how to increase produce in childcare centers, which wasn't one of our main objectives, but all of a sudden we had childcare centers going to farmers markets instead of to Walmart to get their produce. And I just thought that was a really nice added bonus to our work. And so the more that you can have people really strategically thinking about how to integrate those pieces through larger team meetings was important. And then this picture is a yoga event that we did at one of our new parks, which I just love the picture. So I think I've talked about a variety, actually, of these pieces already. The walkability, we had someone who was a group doing advocacy, someone else doing community design. We had two groups that were really doing programmatic implementation. One was the YMCA doing walking groups and really getting out in lower-income communities and basically making the point that, yes, it's okay to walk and it's safe here, and paid staff to just walk. And then we also had the walking school buses the greenways and the policy change, working on complete streets. So that was huge. And then under child care, health, and wellness, I talked about the regulations, the technical assistance, and the training. We now have a referral system, so when health inspectors go into child care centers, there's an issue the health department can't address. It's not, sorry, it's okay, call Success by Six. They will make sure you're connected with the appropriate resource. Success by Six is an initiative at United Way, can't go to 300 child care centers, but they can filter calls coming in from the 30 or 40 that really need extra assistance. And then building in incentives. As I mentioned, we invested in 40 playgrounds at low-income child care centers, which was huge for us, as well as CATCH curriculum in all of our child care centers that we met with. I think our greatest success story was Bessemer City. Its population of about 28,000, 70% African American, and I believe the median average household income is around 28,000 as well. We were able to get new school wellness policies improved there for physical activity and nutrition, particularly in the after school environment. Complete Streets have been passed. They have now received, because of those two initiatives, They receive state funding, I want to say, for $200,000 to put in new sidewalks around schools, which is going to be a great thing for that community. And they were one of our cities that went smoke-free. So very proud of them for making that. This is a visual of how we've defined a healthy food system. It may be a little bit difficult to look at, but my conclusion is just that it is so important to collaborate across all strategies, from grassroots advocates to policymakers to mass media campaigns, that as we look at, regardless of what system you're looking at, and I've chosen the food system here, from growing to harvesting to processing to transport, all the way to packaging and marketing and consuming and recycling, that there are so many different points along the path, and we talk about seed to plate or seed to fork a lot in our community, but it's the same thing for walkability and for secondhand smoke, for that matter. There's so many different points that we can apply pressure and make a difference. And so think about all the different partners, like the food bank or your Freshwater Land Trust, or your YMCA. Our YMCA said to us that they really wish they had thought harder about how they could have been involved in our tobacco work, because there was so much that they could have done, and they didn't even think about it as an issue for them. So knowing, you know, just reflecting on their own mission. And there's some other points of contact, since I'm no longer with the health department, but these are our websites that I encourage you to visit. You can still follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. And we have a new Health Action Partnership website. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Could you integrate, there's a lot of discussion about nutrition, and I was wondering if you also integrated any aspects of home safety.
Home safety?
Food safety.
Food safety. Well, our regulations for child care centers, we had regulations for food safety within the centers, and basically we ramped those up. And so it wasn't, the new regulations aren't just for food safety and aren't just for nutrition and physical activity. We actually established much stricter regulations on safety in general for child care centers, which was something that we were really pleased about. I think Mobile County had 3 child fatalities a few years before because of the lack of regulations in Alabama for child care centers and the ease with which a faith-based center can get a waiver for being regulated. Safety has become a major thing in our child care centers. Is that answering your question, or were you thinking about a different age group?
This is the CCPW and the CTG efforts. Oftentimes with the collaboration and partnership, haven't included environmental health partners, and it's caused some friction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we learned that early on. in both the safety because of, or the regulations with the child care, a little bit with the schools, and then particularly with things like complete streets and talking about pedestrian safety. But there aren't as many regulations from the health department on that end. In the back?
So a lot of this, I'm sure, was driven a little bit by the
That's great. Well, they officially ended September 18th, so we're still kind of a little bit in, they're still a little bit in transition. The great thing, as CDC had promised us, was that, you know, as you establish policies and system changes, you've made something that's lasting as opposed to a program that comes and goes. I am very proud to say that in August, when they held the new annual meeting for the general partnership, there was a real uptick in community partners, particularly the neighborhood associations. And I will say that we had a real lacking of the 99 neighborhood associations in Birmingham being involved in the partnership. So I think that there is a growing interest. The businesses are more committed to the work of the partnership now because of the media campaign, I believe, and because we've shown that, you know, 5 cities have passed smoke-free policies, 6 have passed complete streets. So there's a real commitment. We have new child care regulations. 3 school systems have new wellness policies. I mean, there really are these high-level things that, and the question, I assume, is, well, are there unfunded mandates? And that's a real concern on certain pieces, particularly the child care regulations.
And having continuing
the partnership absolutely. It was there before funding started, and we say it will continue past it. And that we were fortunate. We really were, that we didn't start because of funding. We started because the health officer of the county believed in it. Yeah.
Were there other underlying service needs that were brought up or discussed during the process planning? For example, mothers dealing with obesity or issues about crime and violence in the community and those types of issues?
I don't think there was anything brought up that I can remember that we weren't kind of expecting, but certainly there were issues brought up, and crime and safety is always one when you're looking at improving livability in the community or doing safe routes to school, but truly, I mean, the police department and the YMCA being so close within the different communities they were working in, people seemed to really step up to the plate and work with us, funded or not, to kind of overcome barriers as it happened. I mean, I'm not trying to say it was utopia. It wasn't. but it really was pretty phenomenal. Again, we were fortunate. We had a lot of money. We could fund more partners. We did have a lot of incentives to bring to the table. So, I mean, to be able to spend $400,000 on playgrounds and whatnot, I mean, who does that?
In terms of the police participation, were they able to give you any stat on the reduction of crime because of...
Oh, that I don't know that we have asked for, honestly. You mean reduction of crime through some of this?
Right. But that's usually where most things are left out, is reaching out and really, you know, supporting your data.
Right.
Saying, hey, crime was reduced.
Right.
You know, and...
You know, I think I'll go back to my team there and talk to them about that, because I don't think that we've looked at that. We've been looking at some other statistics, but not crime. Thank you. Yes?
Following up on that, can you describe a little bit what kind of evaluation activities you guys were doing about this, and if you know what
sure.
kind of activities may be happening nationwide of this
program? Sure.
Unprecedented
investment in public health. Yes, I think that's one of the things being held until after the election. CDC has done, they had a large team from ICF Macro doing evaluation. There were these kind of case studies and cost studies done. We had to report a tremendous amount of data about the just process data about the number of hours involved and amount of dollars invested staff-wise and not. Our evaluation, other than the we achieved our policy goals or we engaged X communities, that kind of information, we did a few targeted efforts, and I hope that we'll be publishing something around the child care assessments, because we did assess 100 child care centers, and that was a huge effort, but that data hasn't been crunched yet. And then there was a paper published recently about If You Build It, They Will Come, by Bisaka Sen, PSN. You could look up in Menakemi, near Menakemi, from UAB School of Public Health. And that was around the greenways, and they actually looked at one of our newer parks and whether or not people from different racial backgrounds, and this was just clearly observation, but it's a really impressive study, use the park, what times of day, for what purposes, you know, just relaxing and reading or actually being physically active. And so there were some really good studies actually that have been done. But I don't know if you've heard some of the other CPPW presentations this week. It has been interesting to see, and I think every community did have their own, very much a different experience with it. We were 107 that was dual funded for tobacco and obesity, and that, and we were a small, much smaller community than New York and LA and Seattle. So it was I think a different experience for us, because it was just five core staff from the health department, and then working with hundreds of people outside the health department. Sorry, I could talk about this all year. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone have any other questions for our panelists? I just wanted to ask another question. I guess I posed it to all of them, and it kind of piggybacks off of what Suzette was just talking about in terms of internal capacity to do some of this work. We've heard that you spend a lot of time relationship building, and even, you know, working on policy itself is a shift for many within the health department. So I wanted to see if the panelists would talk a little bit about, you know, how they build their capacity to do this work and also helped to build the capacity of their partners. And I'll pass the mic.
One of the strategies that our health officer applied was to not actually use the money very much for our internal staff. I was never funded. My own time was never funded by any of the grants that we got to do this. We put almost all the money out into the community. So the capacity that was being built was in terms of our own human resources. And an awful lot of the work was teaching people how to do things, how to do a process like this for planning and trying to inculcate that into the department. So he was very strategic about that. And other people said, that's crazy. Why aren't you paying for your own people? You don't have money. But I think it was very, very smart because it kept me on for one thing. Once the grant was over, that was funded by Reaper.
I was funded. actually, during this time that we had CPCW, obviously Nation Work and Work Section, you probably heard about Jefferson County. We're the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the nation. So during all of this craziness, and now the Birmingham School Board, there's at least one of them in jail. So it's just been crazy with the politics. There were layoffs all over the place. And shutting down the courthouses. So we were like the one thing going on, right, I feel like, in the county sometimes. We had, I believe, 80 full-time equivalents funded through this initiative over the course of the 2 years. I can think of about a dozen people that had remained on either with their organization or were hired. The health department didn't hire directly. We worked with our local United Way. They hired the staff that would work with us at the health department, much like public health institutes and other states and counties do. And all of my staff left me at some point to work with one of the partner organizations that they were working with, which was exactly what they needed to do for their selves and their families, and they are still changing the world there. So I'm actually really happy to say that capacity was built very well, and the continuation is there. I hope that helps answer the question.
I would just add one small piece, and that's that the most successful health departments really have a dedicated staff, as they talked about. It doesn't happen by happenstance, and I'm also working on another public health finance project where public health departments, as many of you know, are looking at a lot of layoffs of staff. And the question is, where does this type of activity fall when you have very limited resources?
I mentioned that we had this Complete Streets initiative a few years ago, and I taught the process to someone in the community to actually do the process that we were talking about. And she did, and she's very successful at it. Shortly after the Complete Streets thing happened, she got elected as the city council person for the city. And then shortly after that, we established environmental justice position for the first time, three-quarter time, a couple of years ago. She was the advocate that we hired. So now she is working for the health department, and she's an elected official.
Oh, wow.
I work at a children's hospital, and so my question is, when you're coming from a public health department or say a children's hospital or an organization that's focused on health, and you're engaging with the community, have any of you had a situation where issues come up that are like related to jobs, for example, that clearly affect health, but it may be out of the scope of what you're funded to do or what your kind of mandate is, and how have you dealt with it if an issue like that comes up?
Figure out a way to either handle it or redirect the energy or support the organization to find a different solution. How have you experienced that or dealt with that? I guess I'll speak to one of our great partners, Main Street Birmingham, is an economic development agency, and they probably still don't think that they're public health. They just haven't. They don't quite know that yet, but they work a lot in public health.
Yeah.
So their main focus is in
different districts within Birmingham to build up the Main Street. It's a national kind of economic development program, if you will. And so they contract with the city to do that. And so what we contracted with them to do was to build up grocers and kind of the healthy corner stores and getting farmers to, you know, local farms to bring produce more into those cities as part of their economic development plan. I don't know if this is quite answering your question, but I think it goes to it in that it doesn't matter if they know that they're doing public health or not, as much as I told them they are. And it really just happened over and over again that it was, oh, well, I don't, you know, the conservation group, they only think of themselves as doing environmentalist work. And you and I know that environmentalist work is very much public health, but they didn't ever think of that even as being obesity related. And so learning that language and kind of doing that translation. And then once we talked to them about, well, y'all do outdoor air quality, why not indoor air quality? They started making movements on secondhand smoke. And now our Conservation Alabama Foundation is one of our lead organizations in eliminating exposure to secondhand smoke and doing complete streets. So just never know.
Just a couple of takes on the question. I'm not sure which one's more appropriate to what you were thinking about, but our neighborhood centers that we have become a place for entry-level jobs for a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't get into our systems. One of the quotes from one of our directors of the neighborhood center says, you know, for something to get done, it has to be someone's job to do it. So you can't rely just totally on volunteers. So they hire a lot of people, not really high pay, but they hire them and they give them really interesting experience, which then move them into positions, you know, around various institutions in town. Several examples of that. The other one was just in terms of, you know, our having our hands in employment policy. Like right before H1N1 happened, we had a Shigella outbreak in our neighborhood, which illuminated the fact that a lot of people from poor neighborhoods who had, you know, very, very, you know, minimum wage jobs were going to lose those jobs because of getting sick. And we should take a stand on that, and we did. We haven't gone as far as some health departments where we actually, you know, tried to push through a mandatory sick day policy. We haven't gone that far, but I envision the day we might.
Any other questions?
All right, well, I want to take this time again to thank our panelists. So if you could thank them again for the great presentation.